I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Good morning, New Orleans. There is so much news going on both here domestically as well as internationally overseas. The president is overseas at the present time. A lot of different issues with NATO. Obviously, his next visit with Prime Minister May and a number of the issues that they have going on in England as well. And joining us on the line at this time to talk about that is Daniel Kochus, who's the policy analyst in European affairs in the Margaret Thatcher Center for Freedom at Heritage Foundation. Daniel, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me on today.
So we look at a lot of the same issues that we have here and keeping it under the umbrella of this Make America Great Again that Trump has talked about. It seems as though a lot of those same issues are appearing at the UK as it relates to Brexit and their exit from the EU, and it seems to be creating a lot of disruption overseas.
That's right. So I think some of the, you know, similar forces are at play, both in Europe and in the United States. So one of them is the migration issue. So clearly, immigration is a big issue in the United States. The idea that our borders are unprotected, that we can't be a true nation state without having actual borders, and you know, people who are citizens and those who are not, and sort of the differences that that entails. The same conversation is going on in Europe. So on the continent proper, it's around the migration crisis, which, of course, is very expansive and continues to have ripple effects. And in the UK, this is an issue that extends to both Eastern Europeans who have migrated in large numbers to the UK and are working low-level service jobs usually, and so sort of some of the pushback on certain areas of the UK. On this migration, and then, of course, the larger migration from places like the Middle East, North Africa, and some of the terrorism issues there. There, of course, was it was a huge scandal recently in the United the UK over the last year around a group of Pakistani immigrants who were grooming young girls for sex trafficking and whatnot. So there are a lot of issues on the immigration front that are at play there, similar to the United States. And then I would also say the other broader overarching issue is this idea, and one that the Trump administration has really championed, of sovereignty. So the idea that as a free democratic country that we should have say over our own laws. And it's similar in the United Kingdom, that they want to take back control over their own laws, their own judiciary, so not have the EU be able to override acts of parliament or that of the High Court.
So for the benefit of our listening audience, the UK didn't adopt all of the EU policies. So, for example, they still have their own British pounds as their currency there as opposed to the EU. And there are a number of other provisions that they kind of opted out. So they kind of had more of a bastardized membership as opposed to a full membership like some of the other countries in Europe.
That's correct. So they had some opt-outs, and one of the key ones, of course, was on the currency issue. So they did have some flexibility. They had a different arrangement, somewhat different arrangement, some of the other countries in Europe regarding migration to the UK. But still, you know, they adopted a huge amount of EU laws, regulations, especially in the trade arena. And so this was costing British businesses quite a bit of money. And one of the things it does in particular is that it really disadvantages small and medium-sized businesses. So when you think about the EU, it's a giant bureaucracy that puts out reams of paper, much like our own bureaucracy, just puts out reams of paper and regulations. And the companies that are best equipped to handle that are these large multinationals that can hire teams of attorneys and accountants to actually go through and sort of make sure that they're hitting all of these different regulatory benchmarks and paperwork that they need to file and whatnot. So it's much harder for small companies and medium-sized companies to actually keep up with that sort of bureaucratic burden. And so I think in particular, it really stifles innovation. And so that's something that I think the UK was quite concerned about. And then you also have the issue of, I think, courts. So in the United States, the Supreme Court is the top arbiter of U.S. law. And so I think you have some, legal scholars on the left who would like to see sort of the United States Supreme Court look to, you know, international jurisdictions and international law for inferring what the United States law, you know, should be. And so, you know, the U.S., I think for conservatives, we really want to see the Constitution faithfully applied and what that says. It's similar in the U.K. So you had, you know, the European Court of Justice and the Court of Human Rights and these sorts of things that could come in and make a decision, and that decision would have to then be transposed into the UK, and it could overrule, say, a decision of the highest court in the UK. So that was a big concern as well, and I think hopefully something that eventually the UK will see itself out of.
Yeah, so it seems as though the May administration is kind of trying to keep hold of some of the provisions of the EU while at the same time trying to satisfy the majority of the folks who voted in favor of exiting the EU. It seems to be very much a slippery slope for them.
It is. The Prime Minister is trying to walk a pretty fine line. If you recall, Theresa May was a Remain supporter before she became Prime Minister when she was Home Secretary under the Cameron Prime Ministership. So, you know, her I think instincts have always been towards keeping some sort of closer relationship with the EU, and so that's really what she's chosen to do. Is they're opening gambit to the EU. So they were coming up with this plan. What is our opening position going to be? And it's something of a Brexit light. So we're gonna, you know, stay in certain EU structures, specifically around trade and agriculture and services, and this. And keep their regulations in the UK, and there were a few other areas where it really, in many ways, it kept the same structures that they currently have now. Except now you don't have, you know, they're still paying into the system, for instance, but you don't have that that vote anymore, because now you're no longer a voting member. So in some ways you're actually in a worse position. And so what you saw is many of the more conservative members of her administration revolt over this. So you had David Davis, who was the Brexit secretary. You had Boris Johnson resign, and a few others resign over what they really see as a betrayal of the voters in the UK. This isn't what they voted for. And so I think that this continues to play out. Just today, there was four new amendments put forth on the government's plan regarding, their negotiating position. And so this was an opportunity for, I think, the more conservative Brexit elements to try to push back on the Prime Minister's plan. But a lot remains up in the air, and it's a very, very interesting and fluid situation.
What I found really interesting was how the mirror image of a number of the immigration issues that we're having and debating in this country today are the same issues, asylum being one big issue,
right,
in the EU, and obviously Greece and Italy and others, because there's a rule there that the first country of origin that you land on, that's where you ultimately go back to if you get refused asylum in any of the member EU countries. They seem to be balking at that because of the North African migration. Mm-hmm. And then England is obviously, UK is balking, balking at it as well, as you pointed out, from the Eastern European bloc countries, Poland, Bulgaria, Romania, and others, that ends up being their first port of entry. And they're not able to really move folks out when the asylum is rejected and or denied.
Right. So in the UK, you have the issue of sort of the, you know, free movement of persons, and so people coming from Eastern Europe into the UK, and some of the pushback among certain sectors of the population. And then you also have this sort of larger migration issue. So I think the UK is very keen not to get more caught up in sort of the problems on the continent. Of course, we've seen, unfortunately, a number of terror attacks in England recently over the past few years. And so now you have, you know, for instance, in Calais across the channel, England is actually building a border around the main highway that trucks use to get into the Channel Tunnel to get over to the UK, because Migrants will say, you know, try to put refuse on the roadway so that way trucks have to stop and then they can jump on the trucks and get into the UK. So this is a, you know, so England is actually, English taxpayers are actually paying to construct a wall in France to protect some of the trucks, you know, from basically being, you know, attacked on their way into the UK as people try to get there. So, you know, and I think you also have, you know, a lot of British. British people feel that somehow, you know, they're losing their culture, they're losing their country. They see what's happened in places like Germany and Sweden, where crime is increased. There's sort of this constant threat, say for in France, of terrorism. It seems to be unfortunately a weekly occurrence there. And it's not what they want for their own country, and they want to have control over their own borders and a say over who actually gets to come there. And so that was a huge part, in my opinion, the number one part of why the British people voted to leave the European Union, control over their own borders and control over their own destiny.
And there seems to be a reluctance in the EU to actually deal with that particular issue. I know Angela Merkel has been under a huge amount of pressure in Germany as well, and no one seems to be able to find common ground or some resolution to these challenges.
That's exactly right. There are two reasons for that. One, it's just that it's an extremely difficult, complex issue. So when you have people coming across in rafts or with traffickers, and you know, what do you do with people that you rescue from the middle of the Mediterranean? And then you have some of these, you know, the legal rules. You know, you'd have the southern countries like Spain and Italy saying, well, this isn't fair because everybody obviously is coming here first. And,
right. You
know, so then what they do half the time is they don't actually register people. They just let them pass through. And then so they're not actually registered in the first country. It's a very complex, difficult issue. And then, you know, the second problem is that people within, you know, countries in Europe have competing interests.
Right.
You know, so you have Italy and Germany and some of these countries that have taken a lot of migrants wanting to force countries like Poland and Hungary and these sorts of Eastern European countries to take in the mandatory, you know, quota. And then you have those countries which are pushing back and saying, well, we didn't create this problem. We don't want this. You know, this to be exported to our countries, and they're pushing back saying there's absolutely no way. So you have completely competing interests, and then even within countries that, you know, so even within Germany and Italy, for instance, which agree on sort of this idea they want to relocate migrants elsewhere, you have differences over what we just talked about, you know, the heading back to the country where you first claimed asylum. So there's differences of agreement on that. So I'm very skeptical that Europe is going to get a handle on this. They've tried to do, they made some steps recently to a plan to set up, say, certain centers both in North Africa as well as in Europe to process asylum claims. So we'll see whether or not those get set up and how they function. But I think this is going to continue to be a huge problem in Europe, and I think it's very varied. Opinions on how to deal with it, and I don't think it's going to get fixed anytime soon.
Absolutely. Daniel Kochis, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your insight into this matter. Thank you.
Thank you.
All righty. Have a great week. We'll be right back. We want to hear from you. 260-1870. Kind of interesting. Same issues there, same issues here, same arguments, same challenge trying to find solution. We'll be right back after the break. This is Newell on WWL. We're back, and we're talking about the issues under Prime Minister May's administration that she's having relative to Brexit. Let's go to line one, talk to Jay. What say you, Jay?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, you know, whenever you have a guy from the Heritage Foundation on, there's a lot of distortions that flow from that. This idea of
such
the U.S.
as
having an open border, you know, we're detaining and taking into custody a lot of folks on the border. That doesn't sound like an open border. And these folks are refugees. The only comparison with what's happening in Europe is that they have a refugee situation as well, which he was bleeding over into talking about legal immigrants as if they're all the same.
Well, Jay, let me just stop you one second. First off, he didn't make those statements. I asked the question. I made the comparison of some of the immigration issues.
Yeah.
No, they in Europe they have open borders. It's part it's part of their EU pact. And he was talking about the trials and tribulations that a number of the administrations over there of any number of countries are having as a result of that open border policy.
But he also suggested we have an open border problem here.
No. I suggested that there were very similar issues, one being asylum. It, you know, part of the reason, and this is the thing, that we don't have the issue in Canada. If you get rejected for asylum in the U.S., you go back to Canada. We have a pact with Canada. We do not have that with Mexico.
Well,
one of the European Union pacts is that the original country that you hit of the EU members is the admitting country, and if you apply for asylum in another country, because that's not where you ultimately want to stay, let's say Italy, you go back to Italy under the EU. And what's happening is Italy, Greece, UK, and a number of the other countries are saying that that's not fair to us because we are the original destination country and we're being punished. So they modified it and created a situation to try and spread them out. The other countries that weren't the origin countries, now they're complaining as well. And so they can't get to the ultimate resolution. We'll be right back. Is Trump's presidency a forecast for the UK? 64% of the respondents say yes. Let's go to line two, talk to Jeffrey on the West Bank. What say you, Jeffrey?
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I have a little disagreement with you when you say, when you're comparing the United States issues with the European.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. There's always been, United States has always been more diverse for its different, I would just say races of people in the United States. You know, African Americans, Europeans, of course, the Native Americans. And what you basically having that's coming to America now, the Spanish-speaking Native Americans that's migrating to the United States. And the issue that people have with these people is that they're dark skin. I think that's the issue. That's the similarities in both issues, where in the United States and in Europe. Because I believe if they were more European looking, even in the United States, European Spanish speaking people, there wouldn't be no issue. There wouldn't be an issue. The issue is that they dark skin.
Well, I don't know that the Polish, the Bulgarians, and the Romanians are dark skinned people.
Okay. Well, you're talking about the Eastern Europeans?
Well, that's part of the issue that they're talking about that they had as it related to migration was mostly from the Eastern Bloc countries in the U.K. Now, Italy and Greece and France were talking about North Africans, obviously, because they have, you know, they all surround the Mediterranean Sea.
For what I know, there's not a big issue with the Eastern Europeans migrating. The big issue is with the North Africans.
No, in fact, the big issue in Brexit was the Eastern Bloc countries, and that's what they were talking about, and they're talking about some of the same issues that we see in this country about migration clusters as to where folks ultimately end up residing and the challenges that we have from a macro economy versus a micro economy. From the macro sense, we want more population to come in because it helps the gross domestic product numbers. They go up economically. But in a micro sense, it places a lot of stressors depending on the economic conditions of the folks that are migrating to these particular areas. And the real challenge and what they're talking about in the UK is that it happens so quick. We don't have an open border policy. They do there. So there, the timing of it happens so fast that their local economies are not able to adjust to the increased numbers of folks that are coming in. And that is the challenge. So I don't have this narrow view that it's all about skin color. I know it's convenient and it's easy to go to that, but I think there are much more realistic day-in, day-out economic stressors and other issues that are, present themselves that are very difficult for small areas to deal with.
What I'm saying is the percentage of people...
Well, I don't disagree with you there.
...who have a problem with it. That's the problem.
Oh, well, I don't know about that. Really don't know. I didn't do enough research to know.
Let me say this. This is my problem with all of it. I don't believe America don't have to have 500 million people in it. We don't need to keep having millions and millions of people come into the country. And we don't need it that anymore. There was a time where...
Well, it's not a question of need. It's a question of whether or not we can support it.
Yeah.
Whether we can feed them. Whether we can support them, whether there's enough jobs, how much are going to go on entitlement programs, whether or not the population is willing to pay the taxes to support same. It's all of those particular issues. If we could support it, look, have it, come. 500 million, 600 million, doesn't matter to me. The more the merrier, if we can support it. And if the natural resources that we have in this country are sufficient to be able to accomplish same.
That's true.
Yep.
And I
apologize. I got to get to a break. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your insight. If you're on hold, stay on hold. We'll come back to you right out of the break. We're back, and on a Blue Runner opinion poll, is Trump's presidency a forecast for the U.K.? 61% of the respondents say yes. Let's go to the talk lines. Line one, Don on the North Shore. What say you, Don?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, Sheriff.
Thank you, sir.
I got to tell you, I agree with you, it's finances, but I think it's more than that, Sheriff. You were the sheriff for quite a long time, and before that, you were Harry Lee's chief deputy. God rest his soul. He was a great sheriff. And I think you know that this is immigration at the national level and even the local level. It's not about doing right about for the people necessarily that are coming over here. It's about the dollars. And that's why California is fighting the citizenship issue, because federal tax dollars are not apportioned based on the citizens that live there. It's based on the actual number of people that live there, even if they're illegals. So the more they can have, the more money of the budget, the federal dollars they're going to get, even though they're not paying necessarily a lot of the federal dollars.
Well, that's one criteria. I mean, the fact of the matter is that the reason I bring this up is a lot of folks think that these challenges are only present here, and they're not. In fact, they're fighting and disagreeing and having debate over the same issues of immigration and migration of folks moving in large numbers and how a country's economic system reacts to these numbers. And, that immigration needs to be in an ordered and structured way in order for it to actually work. And so we've seen the science experiment overseas with open borders, and it's not working very well. And in fact, many of the problems that President Trump's talking about relative to NATO are actually coming to the forefront because of the open border policy, when they're looking at domestic terrorism issues, cybersecurity, and the list goes on. So the need for our military troops over in Europe grows exponentially every year because of a lot of the policies that they have in Europe. And what he's saying is, that's all fine and dandy, but everybody's got to put up their proportionate share for this to work, because I can't continue to be the international police force for everybody doing this when you have policies that are creating your issues on many different fronts. And
I agree, Sheriff. And that's what I'm saying about our locally. We're mirroring that on a national level here, because California is disincentivized to correct their illegal immigrant population, and they're actually incentivized to maintain it and grow it because of the burden that's carried by the rest of the nation by their growing illegal immigrant population.
Yeah, I mean, that's one bucket of money, and obviously, but if you were to remove that bucket of money, the not the irony, but the net result would be in California that from a on a budgetary standpoint, they still would be in pretty good shape. You know, so what's happening there is that their state domestic product number has gone up because of the number of people in California, the discretionary spend that's gone on. They're starting to feel the ills because now they're looking into rent controls and everything else in the inner cities because the cost of everything over there has gone absolutely crazy. But they have done it on the back of the immigrant population, and they've yet to really provide the services necessary to support the immigrant population. So they're a little disingenuous in their viewpoint, and I can line up article after article after article that deals with that. But you're right. They do reach out, and they do get a larger proportionate share of federal dollars that go into that state. But I don't know that that's the primary impetus for what they're doing out there.
I don't know, Sheriff. I think after all my years in government, like, I think you would know this. It's, at the end of the day, it's all about trying to get your share or more than your share of the pot of money that's available.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. No, every state does that, though. Every state does that. And how what avenue they use to get there is different for every state, where they're exploiting some program or otherwise where the federal government is providing money. I mean, that's just the way it happens. That's the way it's been happening. And I don't think you're going to see it in your lifetime or mine, Don, where that's going to change.
No, but we can always hope and dream and hope maybe, like Disney says, have
Hope springs eternal. Absolutely. Don, thanks so much for calling in. Appreciate it. We'll be right back after the break. 260-1870 or text us at 870-870. This is Newell on WWL. On the Blue Runner, opinion poll is Trump's presidency a forecast for the UK? 61% of the respondents are saying yes. On the text line, it says, I figured your partisan rear wouldn't say this to the previous caller, that California actually gives more money to the federal government than it receives from the federal government. If I knew that for a fact, I would say it. But I don't know that for a fact. I will say this. California has a very large microeconomy, one of the largest in the country. So your observation may very well be true, but I don't know it for a fact. I will look it up after the show. And that way, next time, I can say it. But I try not to say things that I don't know or haven't read about or I can't prove when I say it, other than some, you know, when I have an opinion about something. I brought this subject matter up for the reason, you know, a lot of times folks are just always saying when we talk about a very proactive immigration policy that there's all kinds of other reasons for it. We're racist, we're this, we're that. We're only picking on the southern border, not the northern border. Well, the difference is we have different pacts with the northern border than we have with the southern border. And that's because the southern border country, Mexico, for example, doesn't want certain things to happen because they are the beneficiary of folks moving to the border trying to get into the U.S. In fact, if you look over the last 25 years, the change of border towns on the southern side of the border has been very positive. A lot of growth there in many respects. And it's not the little shanty towns that they once were. They're thriving cities there as opposed to what it was before. Having been to those towns for a number of years through the 80s and the 90s, saw the growth. Saw a lot of what went on economically down there every year. And you know, there been a series of articles written about this. So everybody has their own selfish motivations and reasons for certain things happening. In fact, in the last hour today, we're going to talk about this child separation issue. We speak of this as though it's something that just kind of fell out of the sky and it's all attributable to this present administration. The reality is we're also talking about abolishing ICE. It's a terrorist organization. They're not doing anything that immigration didn't do 25 years ago. But we don't want to look at the obvious in the face and just make the admission, because everybody's putting up the political smoke screens because we're leading into the 2018 midterm election. So we think if we can throw enough stuff on the wall that we can bamboozle the public into believing one way or the other. But when you start to look at the empirical data in the 90s and the 2000s, we had more kids in detention facilities than we have right now. Double the number. And in fact, the conditions that are set forth today that everybody's saying are horrific, and they may very well be, I have not seen them, is allegedly far better than where it was before. So when we're talking about placing blame, who should we blame? At the end of the day, the only people that can correct this and make it a priority and get this system in order so that we can manage it appropriately moving into the future is Congress. And unless Congress is willing to appropriate the money necessary in order to accomplish the mission at hand, none of this is going to happen. And if we're only doing it pursuant to a settlement agreement that everybody's talked about, the FSA, the Flores Settlement Agreement, court-made law, as opposed to congressional action, a lot of this is moving nowhere fast.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.